Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. My name is Chris Hogan, and I'm excited to host another great episode for you today. Well, it's that time of year, friends. The excitement of the holidays is upon us. And when you have holidays, it's all about family and friends. And so I've got a couple of my friends, some of my leadership friends in the studio with me here today. I've got Daniel Tardy.
Hey, Chris.
How are you?
I'm great. That's the first time you've said friend. In the context of me and you being associated.
And I meant it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yes,
we've come a long ways this year.
We have grown together. And I also have John Felkins.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. Now, listen, we have had a big year in Entree Leadership, Daniel.
Huge.
And so tell us about some of the highlights that jump out to you.
This has been the best year of Entree Leadership. I've been working with Entree Leadership for 8 years. And we've been doing events over the years. We've had the Master Series event, the one-day event. Of course, the book came out a couple years ago. But this year, our podcast has been through the roof as far as listenership. 3.7 million downloads to date, which is astronomical. We launched our EntreeLeadership.com all-access site, which is now the hub of all things Entree Leadership. So there's an online community. That was a big initiative this year that we're really excited about. It's hot out of the gate. We launched early Q4. Our coaching program is taking off. There's just so many things beyond our events that we have kind of planted the seeds on over the last couple of years and are really starting to flourish and sprout that are indicative of the Entree Leadership community really exploding and taking off and becoming more than something that's just about us. But it's really about this tribe. It's really about small business owners all over the country coming together, helping each other solve problems, share their hopes, share their dreams. And it's about the community of small business owners that we're just kind of hosting these conversations. And it's really, really exciting to see this take off and the vision that we have for where it's headed from here.
Well, I know one of the key members of building that community that has helped really grow this is John Felkins.
Absolutely.
John, for you, the community, where do you see this going here in the next year or so?
You know, the thing that Daniel and I talk about so much when we're thinking about the community or the tribe of Entree Leadership is that we have the privilege of working with these people, not only one-on-one, but connecting them in such a way that it impacts them, and then it impacts their entire team, which sets up the opportunity to impact their community in wherever they're living. And then you put enough of those together, you start to connect those dots, and really we get excited about maybe moving the needle just a little tiny bit in the overall economy and marketplace of our country. And that's that really fires us up, man. That gets us out of bed every morning to capitalize on that opportunity.
Well, and one thing, we talk about connection and we use that word kind of loosely, and people go, well, that's cute, I get to be connected. But you know, we found with Entree Leaders, business owners, that sometimes it's kind of lonely in leadership.
Yeah.
You know, and yep. I think a lot of leaders start out going, hey, I got this. I'm type A. I'm gonna go out and start my own thing and bootstrap it. And there's certainly confidence that is inherent with a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes just the nature of isolation and kind of getting trapped in your own thoughts and your own mind,
mm-hmm.
that's where having connection to lifelines outside of your perspective really starts to be valuable, right?
Yep, absolutely. Especially when they come to those crossroads of they got to a certain point because they were good at their trade.
Mm.
And they probably worked alongside other people in that trade, whether they're a vascular surgeon or a plumber. But then they get to the point same thing. It's just a different kind of plumber. One's a little bit more highly paid sometimes. But they get to that crossroads where they realize my trade, my craft aren't the skills that I can really lean on. I've got to learn how to lead people.
What does that mean?
Well, it just means that it's a whole new skill set they've got to develop that they probably didn't learn in plumber school or medical school or anywhere else. And then all of a sudden, they feel alone, exposed, under-equipped, and they're looking for answers.
Yeah.
And when they can find somebody in that same situation, shoulder to shoulder, dealing with the same issues, and they start to open up to each other, that's making that connection.
Well, I totally agree with you. And listen, over the years, I've heard leader after leader tell me, Chris, I learned my dental trade at school.
Mm-hmm.
I learned my chiropractic trade at school. Nobody taught me how to lead.
Nope.
No one taught me how to run a business. And when you see a grown man feel comfortable, like someone has his back,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing you can't do if you feel supported.
That's right.
And so the isolation part that you guys are talking about, I think, is the thing that you all are knocking down out in the business world, that you don't have to do it alone.
Yep.
Yeah, and the connection to the community is giving the business, like John's talking about learning a new skill set. I'm curious to hear you kind of talk about this, Chris. You've got a background in athletics. We talk about the player on the field, you know, say it's the quarterback, but then someday that quarterback looks up and they're stepping in a role of being the coach of the team. Yeah, get out of college and they get into coaching, different skill set, right?
It truly is a different skill set. Same kind of passion.
Yeah, same game.
Same game.
Same passion for the game.
But what you're doing is you're morphing yourself into a role where you become an asset to the team. We've all seen athletes that have held on too long. And so when you have a leader that's not building up other leaders under them, now what you're doing is you're limiting the company's ability to expand and progress. Now, with direct access, you guys are talking about the community aspect. And you're getting people to have conversations together. Tell us about some of the things that you're doing. I know you've talked about mastermind groups.
Yep, you bet.
And
well,
so
I'll
what's
tell
the
you,
goal?
I'll let John kind of unpack the specifics, but our vision for EntreeLeadership.com, direct access, all access, there's three different kind of tiers of it. But the point is that this will be the place for small business owners, the number one place small business owners across the country can come, be connected in a way that they can grow themselves, grow their teams, grow their profits with practical wisdom and community and encouragement from the tribe. And the ways that we're doing that, John can tell you, he's kind of leading the initiatives on all the different ways that the features, I guess, of EntreeLeadership.com.
Well, thank you, Daniel. But you're absolutely right, Chris. You brought up the masterminds, and that's all a mastermind is kind of what we were talking about before. It's an opportunity for business owners to get together in a small, confidential support type group and talk through their issues every month. And every time I get on one of those calls and kind of kick it off, it always amazes me once the ice is broken, how much they start to lean into that and share with each other and, trade contact information and start to support each other automatically. So the mastermind groups are a big part of it. The other thing that we do on a weekly basis at a minimum is we do what we call e-coaching. And that is where we just take some of the EntreeLeadership content, we review it, and then we start to dialogue around it. So we've really have seen where we learn faster, we learn better together. So when we review that information in the context of a group, a lot more comes out of it. So masterminds, e-coaching, and then we've got a ton of just written video and audio content where we are trying to support the business owner on a daily basis with fresh, helpful, practical, wisdom from the trenches kind of content.
You know, I want to underscore, like, we've had people sign up for All Access, and they get in there and they go, oh my gosh, the entire Master Series video library is in here. Like, I mean, it's on the landing page. Like, this is what you get. But I think people that have heard about EntreeLeadership Master Series know it's a big ticket, know it's a full week of their time, and it's a pipe dream of, like, I don't know if I can ever get there, whether it's because of resources or limited time. They get all of that on EntreeLeadership.com now, and they have the access to that digitally, and that's a huge thing that we've done for the first time ever this year.
Well, I talked to a gentleman out west that is a member of that, and he's actually using the content to train his team.
I love that.
You know, and so here's this thing that you guys have crafted and built, and then to have that the access to the information and content to, again, equip a leader to help his team. Yep. And it's this gift that, in my opinion, it's Christmas season, guys, so I'm going to go here. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It keeps on giving. But can we talk about the principle here? Because I don't want this just to be a commercial for us, because if somebody doesn't want to do the EntreeLeadership.com thing, that's fine. But the principle at play is that if you're a business owner, you're a business leader, being connected to a lifeline, being connected to some outside perspective, I mean, you guys know the value in that. Why is that so significant? Why does that make the difference between winners and losers in business?
Here's the thing. I'll take it first. I think if you try to go it alone, then you can fall victim to your own decisions without any kind of fresh output or input to your situation. And so it's dangerous to go it alone. When you plug into people that are doing it probably better and bigger than you are, and maybe even in a different field, but there are these principles that EntreeLeadership teaches that permeate every kind of business that's out there, and it's about building an individual. Mm. If you put yourself on an island, you can feel desperate and you can feel alone, and that's dangerous.
So it's about personal growth first and foremost.
Yes, sir.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm. Well, speaking of personal growth, you know, we've listened to the podcast throughout the year, and each of us kind of picked out a certain podcast that really jumped out at us. And so, John, I want to start with you. What was your favorite clip this year?
Oh, Chris, I loved the interview between Dave and Seth Godin. Mm. It was phenomenal, and it was really two marketing heavyweights, two geniuses in marketing, having this back-and-forth conversation. It was just rich with so much to learn from. That was my absolute favorite for the year.
All right, let's take a listen.
I am convinced tribes might be the manifesto for marketing for the next two decades, that people who don't understand tribal marketing really aren't in marketing anymore.
Well, so let's put some meat on those bones for the listeners who haven't had a chance to read it yet. You know, you are a living, breathing example of what I'm talking about. So there are a few million people who are listening to us, and that's less than 1% of the people in the United States. But this group has an enormous amount in common, not just demographically, because that's not really that interesting, but psychographically. They share a worldview. They share a pulse. They share a set of goals. They share assumptions about the people they meet and the opportunities they see. So the typical person walking down the street says, how do I work less? And the typical person listening to this says, how do I make more? How do I create more impact? That emotional connection enables the tribe, this group, to be able to make a real impact because they're doing something similar. And then someone like you shows up, someone brave enough to stand up and say, follow me. And what you do for a living is you keep the tribe in sync. And the tribe needs to be in sync. We need that deep down from an evolutionary point of view. We need to do what other people like us are doing. And so in your role as the leader of this tribe, you cannot command people to do something. You cannot insist that they do something. But because you have permission to talk to them, you can whisper to them. And as they get more and more in sync, it means that you have more impact and thus revenue follows. But you're not doing it for the revenue like most of us do, don't do it for the revenue. You're doing it because the output of a tribe synchronized is so powerful. And so if you're really going to run a small business for the future, you're not going to run a small business for the future because you are the only store in town that sells something, because that's never going to be true again. We have the internet. You're going to succeed because you are the ringleader, the drum major, the person who keeps your tribe, whichever tribe that is, in sync, because that's what they want.
I was with a group of advertisers the other day in one of our cities that carries our radio show, and they were local advertisers on that particular. And one of the guys spoke up who's in I won't say the industry, but he's in a generic industry. And I was talking about tribes, and he said, yeah, Dave, but you're a trust brand. And I looked at him, I said, dude, if you're in business and you're not a trust brand, you're going to be out of business soon.
Exactly.
Everybody is in the trust business, aren't they?
I mean, Seth Godin is an absolute master of marketing, like Dave talks about. But, you know, I'm feel really privileged to work with another master marketer, and Dave is absolutely that. So to hear those two guys get into this conversation and start talking about marketing, it's like, how many times can I listen to this over again and learn from this? Because it was so rich. And here's the big takeaway I got from that, Chris, and that was everything that Seth talks about is from a perspective outside in. And it's so easy to fall into the trap as a small business owner of always thinking from the inside out, like, you know, doing things to make our analytics look better, make the numbers look better, thinking about the features of the product that we built in or our service, and just thinking about everything from our perspective out. But everything that Seth talks about is about the end user or the tribe member and, you know, where they are psychographically and what's on their mind and what moves them, what motivates them. So he just brings this whole new perspective that is a phenomenal reminder that we always have got to be thinking from the outside in terms of how we're doing our marketing.
Well, one of the things that jumped out at me as well was him talking about whispering. You know, as you stay connected with your tribe, mm-hmm. and you're whispering, that's that constant kind of talking, mm-hmm. what we have in common,
yeah.
you know, that you can't command them, right. but you whisper to them. And I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, I did too. And where he talks about Dave's job being keeping the tribe in sync through that whispering and keeping them all on the same heartbeat, you know, that's a phenomenal power when you can do that and unleash that in the marketplace.
John, that's a big job to try to keep it in sync.
Yeah.
What are some tips you'd give a leader?
Well, first of all, is what I was talking about was thinking from the outside in, because if you're not wired into how they're thinking, then you're going to be missing each other. And that's a big piece of being.
Let me challenge that, because I get that intellectually that that's important, but mm-hmm. my personality style, and I'm not wired like every business owner out there, but I'm probably a similar archetype in mm-hmm. the sense that I'm driven. I'm hard charging. It's about get the goal accomplished and the task and the next feature and the next deal. And so, yeah, I love people and I love sales and I enjoy interacting with people. But I struggle with really being patient enough and really taking the time to stay out on the front lines and place value in my calendar. You know, I think I know that intellectually, but actually putting time in my calendar set aside for interacting with our people, our customers, so mm-hmm. I can really understand how they're thinking, what's important to them, what they value. In fact, I told you this thing coming up next year, this idea about having a regular call with some of our best customers, mm-hmm. just because I feel like I need to be connected. But that's so much of a strain for me. Not because I don't enjoy it, but just it seems like there's always something more urgent mm-hmm. from the inside out to do versus mm-hmm. kind of prioritizing that outside in. So what's the tip for somebody that's wired that way to force the interaction with your tribe, especially if you're a few layers removed from the front lines of your business where the customers interact with your team?
So here's the thing. I know this will seem like a little bit of a left turn here, but you talked about how you're wired, and Chris does such a good job talking all over the country about the DISC profile, and we've seen different people with different personality styles can lead. So you're right. It is an issue with certain personality types that's a bigger issue. But here's the thing that Dave reminds us of all the time, and you know this, Daniel, that we are in a constant conversation with the marketplace. We're having this conversation, and even if we are that real analytics-focused, numbers, goal-driven person, even when we're that person, the conversation will begin to tell us through those analytics, you're not connecting with your tribe. And, you know, we have the privilege, we have the honor to be well-connected with our tribe, and we're striving to do that every day. But as you, as a business leader, see those numbers start to tip down, that's going to speak to you, and that's a part of that conversation. So it's something that has to be a priority and will show up one way or the other. Some of us have just got the inclination that we love to be out there talking to them. I'm a coach, so I spend a lot of my time just talking to those people, whereas it's more of an effort for me to track the analytics.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I'm more of a practical person, so I think, you know, especially during the Entree Leadership Master Series and EPS, we're always meeting with the people that are here,
right.
and talking with them. And then the surveys,
yep.
you know, the post-event. So practical tips for the small business owner mm-hmm. to have that conversation with their tribe mm-hmm. are things that they can do, like what? Surveys and what else?
Yeah, so we did an expert interview in EntreeLeadership.com, I don't know, Daniel, was it a week ago, I think, with Jen Severson, our CMO. And the two big things that I took away from interviewing her was, first of all, think ahead. Plan your year out. You know, the holiday seasons, a Christmas campaign, those kind of things. Guess what? Christmas comes every year. So if you've got a product or service that is seasonal, then you need to be thinking ahead of time and planning your marketing according to the season. So that was one big thing that she talked about. Then the other thing was you've got to track it. You've got to track. So if it's as simple as your receptionist answering the phone and asking the question, hey, where'd you hear about us? And writing that down on a yellow pad. Okay, if you're not doing that, you've got to be doing that. You don't have to be running some big suite of sophisticated analytics software.
Yeah.
You just got to be tracking where your business comes from. And so if you'll do that, if you'll think ahead and keep track of where business is coming from, those are two big things that you could do that don't cost a lot of money.
Sometimes I feel like I'm held back from really asking and being vulnerable with our customers because I'm afraid they're not going to like our thing. Like it's a new deal and it's kind of been my baby and I've been living with it for a while. I guess you would tell me just to suck it up and that's part of it.
You're going to find out the answer to that question one way or the other. So when they cancel from your service or don't buy, you know, stop buying your product, you've just gotten your answer. Would you rather get the answer then, or would you rather ask them earlier on when you can do something about it?
That's good. All right. Well, I want to go into my favorite podcast this year, and there are so many good ones. And I was thinking about, okay, how am I going to pick my favorite one? And I just thought back to what is the one that I felt like just personally was impactful for me and where I'm at in my journey as a leader. And I think that's challenging sometimes, just the nature of what we do. We're interacting with all these high profile leaders all the time. We're interviewing them. We just have a high exposure to leadership content and business conversations. And so sometimes the temptation on this side of the microphone is to just kind of think of this information as just an extension of our product. And I really work hard to challenge myself to think about a consumer mindset and thinking like a leader that needs to grow, right? Go figure. And that's something that's not, you know, we're not immune to that. Just because we work for Dave Ramsey and because we have a business called Entree Leadership, we all still need to grow and we all still have weaknesses. And so the one that really, I kind of caught myself not listening, Don sent this, you know, our producer, he said, hey, listen to this for the, you know, for the kind of the approval before we, you know, send them out and that kind of thing. And as I was listening to it, I got lost in the content. I wasn't listening like, well, does it sound good technically speaking and all of that. I was like, this is good. And that was with Brad Lominick. And Brad has been one of the front runners with Catalyst, huge leadership organization, specializing in nonprofits, but still do a lot of great work for marketplace leaders as well. And so Brad has worked with a lot of young leaders. I'm a young leader in my early 30s and still have a lot to learn, a lot to grow. And Brad talks about this kind of this shift in leadership culture with kind of this next generation. And so it really spoke to me, and I think everybody will enjoy it.
You talk a great deal about the next generation of leaders. And I'm curious, what is it about leaders in their 20s that a small business owner needs to know in order to lead them well?
Well, there's a lot. I think one of the things that tend to be today attention in our culture is this sense of a lot of older leaders looking at the millennials who are coming up, and even the ones younger than millennials starting to enter the workforce, who they just go, I don't get this generation. I don't understand them. I can't figure them out. I don't know how to relate to them. I can't talk to them. All they want to do is text me. They won't get on the phone with me. And, you know, all those things I think are true, but here's the reality, is every old leader dealt with the same thing when they were in their 20s.
Yes.
There was a generation before them that was saying, oh, these young leaders, I don't get them, I don't understand, they won't pay attention, you know, like the same verse has been happening, just a different song, you know. It's a generational transfer issue. So a couple things I would say if you have 20-somethings that are part of your organization. The first thing is you have to realize that they've grown up in a world that's social. So everything about them is social. Social media, social justice, social innovation, social entrepreneurs. Like, there's a new category that says it's all about being social. And what that means is they have a sense that part of the way they live life is that they're connected to everybody and anybody. And, you know, through Twitter and through Facebook and through all these different outlets, Instagram, whatever, you know, the list goes on. I feel like I'm connected to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So my world, the way I view my world, is so different in terms of, you know, when I think of connecting with somebody in a different country, for example. Well, okay, yeah, I can email them, I can get on Twitter, I can find them. So the social side of influence even and of leadership has changed, and the way you have to view that is totally different than the generation before. The other thing is that I think 20-somethings look at life in the same way they look at social media and their worlds of relationships, and it's all integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So companies, organizations have to build family environments. And if you're not creating a family environment, you're probably not going to attract a lot of younger 20-somethings to your team. And that may look like that, first of all, they want to have flexibility with their schedule. They may work till midnight and then get up at 9 o'clock and show up at 10 in the morning and then work till midnight the next night. They don't necessarily see work and family and social, sort of their friends, networks, and faith, and all. They don't look at those as separate.
Okay.
They look at them as all integrated. So the holistic view of my life is a totally different perspective. They also really want to have a huge sense of connection to calling and purpose with whatever they're working on.
Mm.
You know, which is different than I, even my father, you know, or my father's father. Or, there was a lot of folks who viewed work as it's just something that I do as a means to an end.
You know, I kind of straddle the fence on this. We're in an organization where we're a little bit more old school and more conventional. We work 8:30 to 5:30, shut it down, and then, you know, come back the next day and do it again. And Dave, that's definitely kind of his spirit and his orientation. I grew up with that. That's how my granddad was. That's how my dad taught me. And so, you know, I completely appreciate the generations before me and kind of their sentiment about struggling with this whole new kind of fluid, integrated kind of thing. And at the same time, all of my peers are kind of on the other end of that pendulum. And so I find myself kind of waving in between kind of those two thinking perspectives there. And the key here, I think, is less about are we talking to each other over email or text or Facebook or Twitter, and more about, you know, my hope is that, you know, as a leader, as I grow, that I don't ever get to a point where wherever people are having conversations and wherever the culture is at, that I become a dinosaur, you know, and we have to continually grow and stretch ourselves and learn new technologies, you know, new mediums of communication, new styles of communication to be appropriate to that culture, because it's not just the culture of younger leaders. Those are the leaders that are going to be working for you. But your customers, the next generation of your customers, that's where they exist. Your next generation of customers might all be on Instagram right now.
You know,
one of my younger sisters is that's where she spends her whole day, and she doesn't ever do email. She may never do email. You know, she may grow up in a world where it's all about Instagram. You know, I don't know, or Instagram may be, you know, expired by then, and then there's something else. And so if we ever get to the point where we're going, no, that's too loosey goosey, or that, you know, that. That's too much what the, you know, the kids are doing these days, then I think we have gotten to a really risky place as a leader where we're settling in. And at the same time, I know you guys can kind of talk about this. At the same time, I know as a leader, you don't want to lose the principles and the values and the work ethic that does need to be there independent of the technology that we've got.
And that's what I was thinking, Daniel, when you were talking. I was thinking we've got to be able to evolve with the technology. But there are certain traits and characteristics and facts of leaderships, of great leaders, that will never change. And that's what you were talking about. One of the things that I liked was the family aspect. I think that the connection, I think, is what Brad was referring to, that they need to be connected. It's not this, when they leave, they're not gone. They're proud of what they do. They want to talk about it. And I think leaders, especially in entree leadership, we talk about the importance of culture, the importance of loyalty, building unity and loyalty and recognizing. And so I think especially for young millennials that are coming up, the entree leadership principles will help a leader bridge that gap.
Absolutely, Chris. And I was thinking about it from kind of the other side of the coin. When you create this family environment where the team is on a crusade, you're going to get younger people that are on fire for what you're doing. They're going to have ideas. They're going to want to push the envelope. And if you're the dinosaur, the older generation leader, you're going to feel pushed by that. And that's natural. But a question that I get a lot of times is from that younger person, and they ask, how can I have impact? How can I have influence? Maybe they're not trying to work at 12 o'clock at night. Maybe they're just trying to get their boss to use some new computer application that would make the world a lot easier for them, and they're having a hard time to do that. And I always tell them, I said, the best way that you can have impact is, or influence, is to become the best person in the company at what you do. And if you just demonstrate excellence day after day after day, when you speak up, or when the boss, the leader, thinks about asking somebody a question, they're going to come to you, and then you're going to have the opportunity to speak into bigger things in a business. But if you are trying to change the world and you haven't demonstrated any competency.
Yeah. Well, and I had a leader actually tell me, and I want to get you guys' opinion on this. Had a younger kid, okay, mm-hmm. And this guy wasn't a young adult, and he came, he goes, Chris, I feel like he's bucking the system. I feel like he's bucking the system. And you could tell he was offended by it. And so one of the things as a coach that I told him, I said, well, talk with him and find out what it is that he's proposing.
Mm-hmm.
Have him do an executive summary. Make him put some work into it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the financial impact on this idea?
Mm-hmm.
You guys, would you do the same thing? Would you give that same kind of advice? Or what else would you
give
someone?
Well, what I hear there is there's a leader who's frustrated with his personal experiences with that one individual who's, quote, bucking the system. And it may be the case that that individual actually is just representing where society and culture is at. And the frustration is really about the discomfort that that leader has with where the whole trend is going. Mm. And that's not always true.
No.
Sometimes if your customer base is more mature or more sophisticated, or you need to know your customers and make sure that your team culture and your leadership team align with who your customer base is and how they think. But generally speaking, this whole kind of younger generation, older generation thing, more often than not, I think older leaders are paralyzed by feeling like they're not relevant anymore.
That's exactly right.
And trying to use their leadership title or position to kind of hang on to where they're comfortable.
And so this guy that's irritating the leader, and he's saying, I feel like he's trying to buck the system all the time. What really might be going on, just to tag on to what Daniel's saying, is that older generation leader might be insecure in that area. And so he just wants to lock down the old way of doing things and doesn't want to have to think through, grow, develop a new approach. And this younger guy is just kind of picking at and irritating that insecurity.
And I think it depends on the spirit and how the younger person is going about it.
That's
absolutely
right.
They
yep.
may be immature.
Yeah, if there's attitude.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, right.
But that's still an opportunity for the leader
mm-hmm.
to help this young leader or this young individual grow.
Yep.
That's the mentoring side.
Yep.
Now, if they're insecure, what are you going to tell them? I mean, we can't just tell them, John, grow up.
Why not?
Well,
that's what you'd tell them.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
What's a practical thing you would tell them? What's something else you'd tell them?
Well, you know, the best thing to do is just to start asking really good questions and asking, you know, if you're that leader, say, why does this irritate me so much? And just have some self-awareness and start to ask yourself those questions about what this person is doing. You know, is it threatening me? Is it going to cost us a lot of money? And then once you identify those good questions, do what you suggested, essentially, right? When you said, put together an executive summary, put the cost to it, ask that person those questions. How much is this going to cost us? Would you give me a quick synopsis on this? And then let that, you know, go back on them and then see what kind of response you get from them. Because a lot of times when you do turn it around, all of a sudden, either they lean into it and come up with all those answers, or the fires kind of cool off a little bit because they don't really want to own it.
I think in that, one of the things you have to be careful of, especially dealing with younger people coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to stifle their passion,
mm-hmm.
but we do have to help them learn.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, as a leader, if I'm that older leader,
mm-hmm.
how can I help them learn, but at the same time, keep their passion high?
Well, around this particular issue, it's really good not to just rubber stamp this and say, every time somebody brings something to me, I got to have an executive summary, I got to have a budget. No. The bigger the decision, the smarter we've got to be about it. So if the decision is, hey, I want to go to lunch someplace different this time, we don't need an executive summary on that. If it's buying a new piece of real estate or opening up an entire new line of service, then the amount of due diligence that we put back on that person that's proposing is going to scale with that, and that is going to help with that.
Well, and I know from my generation, and Brad, I think, touched on this a little bit later in that same podcast, but our generation is much less tolerant of bureaucracy, policies, procedures, red tape, because it's such a more mobile workforce. We'll go, you know what, there's so much friction here, I don't feel like I can win. I'll go over across town for a lateral pay, you know, a transition, just to have more freedom and more ability to express myself in my work environment.
But those things become bigger frustrations when there's no why connected
exactly.
with having to do the paperwork. So if the leader will sit down and coach that person through, hey, this is why we need to do this. It's not just a knee-jerk reaction, go put together a budget for this. It is, hey, I need to understand, we need to understand together, this is why we need to do this. And that's more of the coaching role as opposed to just a bureaucratic.
And listen, you know, guys like us, we would want to have a quick conversation on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sitting down and spending time, just a 30-minute meeting,
mm-hmm.
just hearing them out could do a lot of benefit. And Daniel, you hit on it. If they're not getting it, eventually they will leave.
Right.
You know, and the last thing you want is for someone to leave with an idea that you didn't take the time to listen to. And they go to someone else and it blows up and does well.
I can hear a 54-year-old go, 30 minutes? These kids should just get this. Like in my generation, we would just say it and then that was it. And then you filled out the form and you did it the right way every time. 30, I got other stuff to do, Chris. 30 minutes?
Hey, listen, what I would do is I'd say go back in time when you were their age. Did you ever feel that kind of frustration? And how much time did you spend in hiring? And how much time will you spend replacing? Because if this person doesn't feel valued and listened to, they're going to leave. They're a headhunter phone call away from going to someone else. So that 30 minutes, if you look at the training, would probably correlate to probably more than 152 hours you have poured into this person in recruiting and training. I think 30 minutes is doable.
It's a small premium on a big insurance policy.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Hey, speaking of trust, and speaking of talking to people with wisdom, people that have not only wrote about it, they've been there and they've done it. I had an incredible opportunity to interview one of my mentors growing up was Ken Blanchard. The man is a management and leadership genius. And his podcast, he hit on this area of trust. And it's one of those things that can never go away and it's never going away. And as a leader, the more you have of it, the more you can take your team to newer heights. Now, in the book Trust Works, I got it several weeks ago. I sat down, I read it. I read it again, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think you've hit on something that businesses and leaders have forgotten about is the importance of trust. What drove you to focus on putting this book together?
Well, Cindy Olmsted, who I wrote it with, I look for people who are really doing exciting things. And she'd been studying trust for 20 years. And she would ask people, Chris, you know, describe somebody you trust. What are their characteristics? Somebody you distrust. And she found there was different definitions of trust. And she did a really whole major study and came up that with the ABCD, which there are really four factors in trust. And you can be good at all three and not at one. And then somebody might not trust you. But A stands for ability, which is do you think the person has the competency to do the job that they've been asked to do, you know, so you tend to trust people who you think are skillful. B stands for believability. This is all about integrity, you know. Do they really walk their talk, or do they, you know, speak one way and act differently the other way? Connectedness, the C, is how do you feel about them? Do they care about people? Do they care about you? Do you feel connected to them? And then finally, D stands for dependability, which is can they count on your word? Are you reliable? So it's a really interesting. We in the back of the book have a section where you can fill an instrument out right away and find out where you think you are on the ABCD. And then at the end of the book, there's an instrument. You say, am I trustworthy? You can give to colleagues and people around you to see what they think, and that can be real kind of interesting too, you know, so that you can find out how you're being perceived. But trust is so important with leaders, and I think when we lose trust, then people just don't listen to them anymore.
You hear that, you guys, and for me, one of the things that really jumps out is that trust takes time, and it's got to be intentionally built. And it can only happen with being connected to people. As you do that, there's a vulnerability factor in this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you guys, but being vulnerable, it takes some work. You've got to be comfortable in your own skin to be willing to be vulnerable. So as you hear trust, Daniel, and you hear Ken talking about this, as talking to leaders and being a leader yourself, what are things that are important to you in building trust?
Well, one thing I've been learning is that trust with my team, my experience, is less about my ability and my skills and more about my willingness to serve and to be a part of the team. And, you know, I used to think that, you know, if I'm just good enough, if I'm the top gun, you know, if I can close more deals and make more things happen and have better meetings and those things are important to grow in those areas, but I think the temptation, especially for younger leaders, is to think, well, just be the hot shot and everybody will trust you because you got what it takes. And really, I think it's kind of the antithesis of that, because that kind of sets you up to come off as arrogant and pompous and proud. And certainly, I'm not saying to not be confident. You've got to lead with confidence and you've got to believe and have the vision, right? But when you'll sit down and talk to your team and go, hey, we have this challenge. I don't know what to do. What do you guys think? We did this yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, we had this challenge that came up with a meeting we were going to have. There was a conflict. There was something going on. It was an important meeting. I really didn't know what to do. And I wanted to go tell the team, hey, here's what happened. We made a decision. It was a great decision because I made it. Like, I mean, the human side of me wants to have all of my stuff together and go, guys, here was the challenge. I solved it. So you can trust me because I'm capable of solving things on your behalf. But what I learned and what I fortunately was, you know, did yesterday and kind of had the intuition that's come from making this mistake in the past and not doing it this way. You know, I pulled a few people together and I said, guys, I don't know what to do. What do y'all think? What would you do? You know, and I got several perspectives and everybody weighed in. The team really made the decision. You know, I directed the conversation a little bit, but, you know, I think those are the types of conversations that build trust because the team feels like they're getting to lead with you. You know, they're getting to be a part of where everything is going. Ultimately, there are times where you have to make tough calls.
Yes.
Not always is it a consensus and not always is everybody going to agree with where you're going. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about regularly exercising this muscle of being vulnerable with your team and letting them know that you're not the leader because you have all the answers. You're just the leader because you're going to go first. You're just the leader because you got their back and you're going to hustle, you know, as hard or harder than they are, not because you know everything.
See, and I think that's trust if you begin to do those. And I like what you said about having the maturity to look back at past mistakes and not wanting to repeat them, which is wise. John, you hear the word trust. As a coach, as someone that's worked with businesses for years, what are some principles that are different from the things Daniel talked about, but that come to your mind in relating with trust?
How quickly it can be destroyed. You know, when Daniel does things like say, I don't know what to do here, or I messed this up, we're going to do this a different way, he owns mistakes, and that builds more trust. But when we do things like blame other people, don't give other people the right amount of credit, we have a moral failure, we strike out at people because of a temper, any of those things, man, trust evaporates in a nanosecond, and it is so fragile. It can be destroyed so easily. It takes so much work to build it, but we're all one stupid human trick away from destroying trust with everybody in our world.
Now, listen, there is a difference between like and trust.
Right.
Daniel hit on that.
Right.
That you, at times as a leader, you got to make some decisions that may not be popular.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where trust is in your corner. If your team trusts you, you know, the Covey guys have a book out, The Speed of Trust, which is great. You can go at the speed at which your team trusts you. Because we were talking about earlier that older generation, younger generation thing, like there are times you got to come in and go, listen, I just need you to do it because we're doing it. And I don't have time to explain it. I don't have 30 minutes this time and you're going to be on board. And if there's a high level of trust there, hey, I'm game. I mean, Dave does that all the time with me. He's like, hey, listen, you're not going to understand this. You see things just in the context of your area, but for the sake of the whole company and where things are going and some things I can't even talk to you about right now, I need you to be in on this and I need you to be in on it publicly and loudly and be one of our advocates and ambassadors across the whole company, not just because, you know, I'm telling you
now,
to. But
now, hold on, Daniel. With the history you have with Dave, for him to come in and make a statement like that, in your mind and in your heart, what happens?
Well, first, selfishly, I go, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I don't think I agree with you, but intuitively, he has earned so much trust with me through his credibility in the past, to putting deposits into that account, and to places where he's made mistakes and he's come back around and apologized and said, hey, I blew it. You know, I value you. Like, I trust him with my kids. I trust him with my wife. I trust him with anything because he has built that for me. And so if he comes in and says, hey, we're taking a hard right turn, you know, I'm on board. Where are we going to go? And it's not because he's got a big, strong personality. You know, I mean, that, you know, there's times he and I go toe-to-toe on stuff about, you know, wrestling through an issue. And so it's not a fear, oh, you're the boss and you said so. It's, hey, I trust you. You know, this is a team. We're in this together. And ultimately, God's given you the vision and the leadership for the whole company. And I'm a steward of my area, but my area is is one cabin and the whole ship, right?
Yeah.
And I've got to be able to play like that.
Well, listen, it was an incredible opportunity for us to listen to these things that were our best podcasts. I had an opportunity to talk with Daniel and we've stirred up some stuff going on for next year. What's going on?
Well, we're talking about the podcast. We're realizing how big of a following this podcast has, and how much of a value add. I mean, people are telling us, hey, we really appreciate the podcast. In fact, more and more people come to our events going, yeah, we heard about you on the podcast, which we love that. And whether you're listening on your treadmill mm-hmm. or in your car or doing yard work, you know, our hope is that we're getting valuable content out to our listenership in a way that empowers them, that's encouraging, that gives them something that's fresh. And so, first of all, we want to continue to get everybody's feedback. And if you guys tweet at us at Entree Leadership or email us at podcast@entreeleadership.com, we really do read that stuff. We really do value it. And we try to incorporate as much of that feedback as we can into the format of this. You know, you may go, well, hey, that Daniel Tardy guy, he talks way too much. Well, cool. I'll just not show up and we'll let Hogan do it, right?
Well, they might say that Hogan's voice is just too high-pitched.
We get that a lot. We get that a lot. But, you know, in all seriousness, we want this to be something that's extremely valuable. Whether you ever buy one of our books, whether you ever come to one of the events, whether you even ever come to our website, that's not the point. The point is we're trying to help small business owners win, and we want to be a resource for small business owners. So we are looking at the format of this podcast and looking to shake things up a little bit. And so we're not going to let the cat out of the bag yet on exactly what that's going to look like. But we are wanting to do some things where we've got more frequency and more samplings of different types of content, more interviews. The coaching tips have been popular. We'll probably have Falcons in here more. So we've got a great vision for that. Don Haney, our producer, has been fantastic at coming in and,
yes,
and really taking this to new heights. And
absolutely.
So we're really, really rocking on the podcast thing. It's pretty exciting.
Listen, from the conversations we've had, I'm excited about the resource that this Entree Leadership brand is going to continue to be for business owners and leaders. I truly feel like we are just scratching the surface.
You know how many small business owners there are in America?
No.
Small business, well, I don't know how many owners. Small business, according to SBA, 27 million small businesses in America. Most people work for a small business.
Wow.
Most people do not work for a Fortune 500 company.
That's huge.
They're in the news all the time. That's all we hear about because it's the big titles, right? But the heartbeat of this country is small business, and that's our heartbeat. That's where we're at, and that's what we want to help.
And I'm going to tell you, there are people that are incubating and thinking and planning for new businesses even as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so the resources for established businesses, but also people that have that heart to become a better leader, even if you're working for another company,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you can still grow and build yourself. So I'm excited, and I want to encourage you all to stay plugged in to us. In the meantime, we're going to continue the conversation on EntreeLeadership.com. I want to thank Daniel Tardy for taking the time to join us. John Falcons as well. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
You know, these guys are the ones that are kind of blazing the trail with Entree Leadership. And I'm telling you, there are exciting things to come in 2014. We appreciate you all as listeners. Thank you for taking the time to tune in with us. I want to thank Don Haney as well, our rock star producer. And I want to wish you all a very happy holidays and a very Merry Christmas. Enjoy the downtime with your family. That's why we work, is to be able to love our family and take care of our family and our friends. So I want to encourage you to enjoy that time. And so stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. I want you to keep learning and keep leading. And until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits.